Hello, and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And we have another exciting episode where we're going to talk a little bit about time in range metrics and outcomes from those. And to do so, we have a special guest, Dr. Viral Shah, who has done extensive research in this area. So Dr. Shah, we're so excited to have you today. And if you don't mind just introducing yourself, telling us a little bit about your background to our listeners.
Yeah, sure. I mean, thanks for having me in this podcast series, Diabetes Dialogue. My name is Viral Shah. I'm a professor in medicine, Division of Endocrinology at the Indiana University. I also direct the Diabetes Clinical Research Program at the IU Center for Diabetes and Metabolic Diseases, again in Indiana University. My research focuses on newer therapeutics and technologies and how we can improve the lives of people with diabetes using those newer therapies and devices. And so again, happy to be here and would love to dive deep into our research paper.
Well, thank you for coming to our podcast today. So again, another amazing study. You've had several right in a row published where Diana and I are talking to each other, this one and then this one. So the most recent study actually looked at time in range and its association with incident diabetic retinopathy in adults with type 1 diabetes in a longitudinal study. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I'm sure, and I think I will give you a little bit of a background about this study, why we did that, right? So we all know in this space, and the audience of this Diabetes Dialogue is very well aware, we have used the A1C for past four decades. It's a very good matrix that has been associated and proven to be, you know, associated with diabetes complications. That is coming from DCCT in type 1, UKPDS in type 2, and numerous other studies. But we all understand the limitations of A1C when you see a patient with type 1 and type 2 in a clinic. A1C alone is not sufficient, and that's why we all recognize a CGM matrix that's like time in range, time in tight range, glycemic variabilities, or time below range, those kind of a matrix that are really meaningful to talk to the patients and change some therapies to improve outcomes. And so we all are using that part. The consensus has given a really good, some guidance on how to use this goal to improve the outcomes. Now, the main question is that a lot of people are asking this question is that, is it going to replace the A1C? Or we have a solid evidence with the A1C about the complication, but what about this time in range? So in that case, you are asking to do another DCCT-like trial using the CGM matrix, which is going to be a really expensive way of proving this. So we thought that we can do that in a way, I call it a mini DCCT idea that we proposed to the JDRF, and the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation was nice enough to fund this idea. So what we did is in this mini DCCT is that we looked at the people who have diagnosed with diabetic retinopathy now, but we wanted to make sure that did not have diabetic retinopathy in the past. So we went back into their lives to make sure that they have at least the 2 eye examination without diabetic retinopathy. Similar group who did not have diabetic retinopathy now and never before. So it's a very stringent process of selecting this case and control. So type 1 with retinopathy, type 1 without retinopathy. And then we went back into their lives and looking at the continuous CGM data as long as we could go back. So up to 2013 and prior to that, we had a trouble of retrieving the data because we all know that the older generation CGM were not cloud-based. So it was not going to the cloud. It's all physically located in the computer devices. So it was hard to retrieve those data. But 7 years of a continuous that CGM data, and this is a raw CGM data. These are not like a PDF report. So it's a numbers of Excel spreadsheets that we extracted to now look at the association between CGM matrix and development of the diabetic retinopathy, which is incidental DR. So this is kind of a background leading to this research.
Wow. So what did you find?
Surprise, surprise, that I think, you know, that time in range is strongly associated with incident diabetic retinopathy. And if you ask me this part, that A1C and time in range had a pretty similar association. So let's say, for example, number-wise, each 0.4% increase in A1C would increase the risk for diabetic retinopathy by 19%. And each 5% decrease in time in range. So 5% time in range is equivalent to about 0.4% reduction in the A1C, right? Would lead to 18% increase in diabetic retinopathy, right? So it's a very similar outcomes whether you use the A1C or you use the time in range. What it suggests that this both matrix are providing us a very similar information about an individual's glycemic control as well as the long-term association with microvascular complications.
That's really awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because, wow, that's so similar. I actually am surprised. Right. Wow.
And it really paves the way for us to not be so A1C centric and really hopefully be able to use time in range. So I'm curious, can you tell us a little bit about time in tight range, that 70 to 140, and if that was associated with any of these outcomes?
That's a great question. And again, I'm glad that you asked this question because I think time in tight range is now gaining momentum. And then there are reasons for that, right? Number one, that current definition of time in range, that's a 70 to 180, is not physiological. And this is how I think about that. We do a lot of lab testings, right? You do TSH level, and then lab comes with a normal reference range. How do we derive that reference range? It's like, you're going to test those 100 individuals without disease, and then you derive that 95% confidence interval. That's a reference range. Is this 70 to 180 is the reference range? The answer is no. If you put the CGM on people without diabetes, that 70 to 140 is a more natural reference range than 70 to 180. So it makes sense to talk about the time in tight range. Now, we did look at the association between time in tight range and the diabetes or diabetic retinopathy as a complication in this study. And the complexity here is that, and this is more of a mathematical thing, the time in range and the time in tight range are so tightly correlated. The correlation between these two are almost like a 0.9. So 90% of the time, the time in range and time in tight range goes in the same direction, in a similar way. And so when you have a tween, this is like TIR and TITR, it's really hard to separate whether the time in tight range would be independently associated with diabetes complication. In nutshell, I think the time in range and time in tight range both were associated with microvascular complication, and it's because they are very similar in nature, it's hard to differentiate whether the time in tight range would be much better than time in range. So I think in nutshell, the way that I think about interpreting this finding is that I think the time in range is very appropriate for target for a lot of people with type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Once they achieve that target, let's say somebody is having a 70, 80%, 90% time in range, then it makes more sense to talk about the time in tight range for those individuals, right? So I think it does have some clinical implication, but in terms of the microvascular risk, from our study point of view, I don't think that the time in range and time in tight range would be able to, we will be able to differentiate the risk of complication because they are very similar.
Wow, that's so interesting. So what about the glycemic variability? Did you see any differences in people with great glycemic variability versus less glycemic variability?
That's another interesting question. And so In again, in summary, the glycemic variability was not associated with diabetic retinopathy in our study. And I will tell you the answer, probably why. And the reason behind that, what's the definition of glycemic variability? There are many ways that we can calculate the glycemic variability, right? There are even mathematicians have proposed like 15 different criteria, MAGE, and like, you know, this high glycemic index and low glycemic index and so many things. So the simplified way of glycemic variability is coefficient of variation, which is easily understandable by provider, patients, and everybody. But then downside is that the mathematical formula is standard deviation by mean, right? So every time you're trying to, mean divided by standard deviation, but every time you're trying to reduce the mean glucose, you are also reducing the CV, right? Opposite direction. I don't know why I'm getting mixed up. So let's say someone who is staying at 250 milligram per deciliter throughout the day and night, this person will have a low glycemic variability CV because the mean is so high compared to the standard deviation. So actually in people without diabetic retinopathy, which are controlled in our group, had a slightly higher CV because they had a lower mean glucose. Okay. The difference was not clinically relevant. It was just a statistical thing. But what it implies is that the current way of measuring glycemic variability by coefficient of variation is not something that is going to give us an answer about the glycemic variability and its relationship with diabetes complication. We would need some other way of measuring glycemic variability. We need some different tool to measure the glycemic variability. I do believe that the variability has to do something in a physiology. Because normally you don't have that much of variability, right, when people don't have diabetes. So, and there are a lot of cross-sectional studies that shows the association between glycemic variability and adverse outcomes, whether it's a cardiovascular or microvascular. But there are no prospective study to prove that part. And it's just because that we don't know exactly how to calculate glycemic variability. What is the best way to do it?
So interesting.
Yeah. Well, speaking of cardiovascular outcomes, what do you think it would take to be able to associate time in range or time in tighter range with cardiovascular outcomes?
This is the tough question. And so the issue with the cardiovascular outcome is that it's not only related to glycemia. We know that, right? It's related to the other variables as well, like blood pressure, cholesterol, the obesity, overweight, insulin resistance. And so teasing out only the glycemia component out of those many other variables that are affecting cardiovascular is going to be tough. And I think it's hard to do that kind of a randomized control trial to have like, okay, we're going to keep all these variables same and only have a glycemic differences. So I feel like that question will remain with us for quite a while because it's difficult to tease out that.
Interesting. Okay. Wow. So my head is full, but I think it's a great thing. I think it's a great step in the right direction to say this is all correlating though, right? That the A1C and time in range and you know, more and more people are using continuous glucose sensing. And, you know, we then look at GMI versus A1C and we look at these outcomes. Can we, you know, reduce the number of times someone gets an A1C during the year and still help predict what's going on? But the three of us are probably that, you know, singing that in that same basket of those CGM metrics help us have such a more vibrant discussion with the person that's sitting in our office that day around, you know, the idea that I can say to someone, when we increase your time in range, I'm reducing your risk of retinopathy. That's profound, you know, and that's, I think, what we're looking for in clinical practice is when we can look at a person and say, we just reduced your risk, you know, that's everything to us as people who practice and see patients every day.
I agree.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm just excited because we use time in range clinically, but to now have more data, more evidence behind it, linking microvascular outcomes is really important, really clinically important. So kudos on this really important research.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you to Dr. Viral Shah, and thank you to everyone who tuned in for this episode. That concludes this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, and we hope to see you all next time.